Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to yet another edition of Comedy Central. I mean, We the People Radio. We like to start the morning off laughing. Isn't that fun?
That's only when you get halfway to the radio station and realize you forgot your glasses.
And you're wearing your pumpkin shirt. It's not Halloween.
Hey, it was so busy last week, I thought it was October already.
What gives?
I don't know.
Couldn't see what shirt she was putting on this morning. She didn't have her glasses.
Well, shirt and then the whole glasses thing.
Are you just wanting to get the election season over? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, we're there. I'm ready to vote. You know, because if it's Halloween, we're close. Yeah. We are close.
Yeah, hey, trust me, it'll fly. So, Aaron and Elizabeth, your hosts, and our great music master. I don't know what else.
Bob's been so busy this morning. He's still wearing his outdoor vest.
Yeah, you haven't even taken your coat off.
It's not cold in here. Ever.
There are some days when I wear it all day long in here in the air-conditioned studio. Because some people on the staff like it really cold in here.
Huh. I dream about the air-conditioned studio.
Yeah, it'll keep you from falling asleep.
Exactly.
Hey, so I think you folks know the number, but in case you don't, it's 530-605-4567. Feel free to call and tell us what you think about today's topic. And we're streaming and chatting live at wethepeopleradio.us. So check out our webpage. It is stock full of information. Not only do we have everything you need to know about today's guest, but we have all of our shows archived. You can click on any one of those and email it directly out. And we are streaming worldwide, so no excuses not to pass on the information.
Exactly. And there are a lot of good topics. We're finding that we've got people linking up from all over the place. Got an email last week from South Korea.
We did double check the email to say make sure it didn't say North Korea.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's okay to have friends in South Korea. It's not cool to have friends in North Korea.
Yeah, so I would look that email up and tell you if it's Suzanne or Susan. I can't remember which, but I can't see it, so it doesn't matter.
Hey, and you know, if you haven't tuned in before, the tenets of our show are fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And, you know, I've been kind of thinking this through quite a bit lately about how our show, you know, kind of fits in with other talk shows out there. Obviously, it's a political talk show, but the difference is, we don't spend a lot of time chewing the fat about our opinions. We don't spend a lot of time reiterating what you'll hear on every other radio show. And we really like, more than anything, we like real people. And so we have a tendency to bring in speakers.
Because those fake people don't talk, and well, on radio, that's a deal breaker.
Cardboard cutouts just don't cut it. But we find great Americans out there that are in the background fighting the fight. They have areas of expertise. They're in the trenches with people that are actually being affected by government overreach, and those are the folks that we like to bring on board. So we rarely discuss political races or anything that's going on in mainstream media.
Although, unless you've had your head in the sand, you've noticed that lots of things in the northern half of California, as far as the seats for the different races, have all changed.
It's been a massive chess
assembly.
It's a chess
Senate,
game.
Congress, everything. So if you think you knew who was running for what, you should really check again.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because everybody sort of switched places and they moved around based on one announcement. That's kind of interesting.
Very interesting. And you learn a lot. So here we go. We all watched redistricting, and now we don't know if that's done for the Senate. We're watching to see if those lines come through, or if the judges draw them, and if the judges draw them, where are they? It's going to get interesting here pretty quick. So, We the People Radio, the website actually links back to one of the Tea Party websites, and there's also a link off of that for the Support Rural America site. I thought I'd just put a little pitch in for that. The Tea Party site has a broad base of information on there, so people are posting about presidential races, local races, different issues, all sorts of stuff going on. But the SupportRuralAmerica.com site are issues specifically about rural America.
And private property rights.
Correct. And I mean, you could, okay, you could make, you know, the Eurozone part of private property because obviously all these things are intertwined. However, we're trying to keep it about issues that specifically affect rural America. So if that's a passion of yours, plug into that. I apologize that the site, if you want to, quote unquote, be a member on this, it's a social network. If you want to be a member, it requires approval. Sorry.
But we try to get on that pretty quick.
Well, it's not something I can change. And so Robert's almost always on his computer, and he clicks it over pretty quick. You can post, I believe, without being a member. I tried to set it up as open as possible. So,
yeah, so even though we are in a global community, we do try to keep our issues at least on America's soil.
Yeah.
That's what we like to focus on.
Well, you know, and like issues like the wolves, that's been a big one on that site. Mm-hmm. You know, they say it's not a reintroduction of the wolves, but we all know it is. And so that's a big one on there. So we have video and different things on there from Idaho and Montana and all sorts of other places. Also, you can view that sheriff's panel that happened up in Yreka. That show is going to go on the road here pretty quick. They're looking at doing one of those in Alturas, I believe in April. They want to have one of those in Redding. We're looking to have them in Lassen County.
They're going on the road.
Yeah.
The sheriffs are going on the road.
Exactly. So we're looking to take the constitutional sheriffs on the road and you know, get the word out to the different communities and let people in the community know where their sheriff stands, what's going on, and you know, how they can support and how they can plug in.
Right. And you know, this is kind of a perfect segue into our guest today. I'm going to give a little bit of information about...
Go segue, girl.
Tim Sandifer. And Tim Sandifer is the principal attorney, the National Litigation Center with the Pacific Legal Institute, or Foundation, excuse me. And they basically, well, their mission statement or the little tagline underneath Pacific Legal Foundation basically says rescuing liberty from coast to coast. So they are, you know, on the ground fighting battles for people that are having issues with private property rights. And his background is that, like I had mentioned before, he's the lead attorney in the foundation's Economic Liberty Project. He works to protect businesses against abusive government regulation. He also works to prevent the abuse of eminent domain, having litigated important eminent domain cases in California, Missouri, and elsewhere, and having filed briefs in many significant eminent domain cases, including Kelo versus New London. He's the author of two books, Cornerstone of Liberty, Property Rights in the 21st Century America, and The Right to Earn a Living, Economic Freedom and the Law. And the thing I really like, and Tim, you can jump on board just about any time here, is that you were a student at Hillsdale College.
That's right. I graduated from Hillsdale in 1998 and then went to law school at Chapman University in Southern California, which is one of the most free market law schools that there is.
And good morning to you.
A very fortunate way of coming into the law of liberty.
Well, the thing that I love about Hillsdale College, and correct me if my facts are not accurate, but I believe they are the only college in America that will not accept any federal funding. And if you're a student that wants to attend and you happen to be using government grants to fund your college education, they will not accept you as a student.
That's right. Although there is now one more college that does the same. Grove City College in Pennsylvania, about 10 years ago or so, was finally able to build up a financial base so that they could also say that they will no longer accept federal funding.
Oh, that's awesome. And then at Hillsdale, you study the Constitution all 4 years. Is that correct?
Not when I was a student there. Since I graduated, they have implemented a required course on the American Constitution. So they have a set of required courses that all students are required to take regardless of their major. And after I graduated, they added a course on the American Constitution to that list. And if I remember correctly, Justice Clarence Thomas taught it one semester. I'm sorry to say that was also after I graduated.
Okay.
I'll just have to go back.
Now, we're gonna be taking a quick break here in just a moment, our first commercial break. But when we come back, I was watching an interview you did with Reason TV, and you were talking about the progressive movement and how it kind of came about in the late 1920s, 1930s, And I remember that you said that the theory behind the progressive movement was that society was a plant that the government needed to tend to and cut back when necessary, which I thought was an incredible analogy, completely off, you know, off the rails as far as a great theory, but that was kind of behind the progressive movement.
Yes, that's right. The progressives really saw themselves as an intellectual elite who were in a position to shape society in the way that they thought it ought to be shaped, and they would use the government to do that by telling people how to live their lives.
Hmm. Well, I think we can safely say that they have taken hold in our society, and anybody who's paying attention to YouTube is watching these public meetings take place. And when you go against the gardeners, they get upset.
It's remarkable to me how thoroughly progressivism reshaped American political values. In the 1880s or so, when the progressives really first started, their ideas were considered very radical. And today, both political parties and virtually every active politician in America would qualify as a progressive. And they all believe, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or anywhere in between, that government exists in order to shape society into the way that elites think it ought to be shaped. And that's a progressive idea that traces its roots back to philosophers like Hegel and have really nothing in common with America's founding fathers.
Now, do you think that politicians ultimately become the elite? When you say that any politician is essentially of a progressive mindset to shape society as the elites think it should be, does that infer that at some point all politicians become the elite?
Well, I don't know, not necessarily maybe, but I do think that the way that our system is set up fosters that mode of thinking. The ideas of classical liberalism on which the American Constitution was based are considered laughably primitive by today's intellectual leaders. And of course, today's intellectual leaders are the teachers of the next generation. So, you know, the progressives were very successful in California politics. In the 1920s, there was a big election where a lot of progressive politicians were thrown out of office. And where did they go? They all joined the faculty at the University of California to become teachers. And so then their students grew up believing in their ideas, and then their students and their students and so forth. So it's all about ideas. And if we want to return to the original basis of the American Constitution, it's going to require a change of ideas and a reexamination of the progressive notions that are at the basis of education throughout the country today.
And on that happy note, we've got a lot of information coming for you today. You're going to like this program. You have 2 minutes to call your friends and get them online listening at wethepeopleradio.us or here at Free Fire Media at KCNR. We'll be back in 2 minutes. We'll thank our advertisers and see what kind of music Bob has queued up for us. See you in a second here on the home of Free Fire Media.
Since daddy had to fly, I'm finding a place where we can go. Still I'm just climbing. Sit and watch the clouds roll by, the tall grass fades in the wind.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Underground like a wild potato.
Don't go on the patio.
Beware of the blue bottomless pool.
It leads you straight right through the gate that opens on the pool.
One of our themes today is songs that reference Idaho.
Gee, I wonder why.
was like, okay, who was that?
The B-52s with Private Idaho there.
Yeah, I came in this morning.
That was back in the Rock Lobster days.
I came in this morning like 10 minutes early, and Bob couldn't even talk to me because he was so intent on finding every song that had the word Idaho in it. And there's a reason for that, because I'm sure we're going to eventually get to the recent Supreme Court determination that the EPA has overstepped their bounds when it comes to private property rights in a personal battle in the state of Idaho. Welcome back to We the People Radio. We are with Tim Sandifer of the Pacific Legal Foundation, and Tim was involved in that case. But, you know, Tim, before we get to that, I really am interested in your book, The Right to Earn a Living. Because history tells us everything. I mean, if you're ever diving into anything political, the thing that you will hear is that you need to read history, you need to learn history, you need to know what history will teach you. And you kind of go all the way back to the Civil War when it comes to the right to earn a living, private rights, personal rights, and what's happened through the progressive movement to eventually erode those rights. So,
yeah, well, you know, there's a famous quote from the writer William Faulkner who said that the past isn't dead; it's not even past. We live in a stream of history to try and understand things around us just in terms of the concepts involved leaves out a lot of important factors, and history teaches us why we are in the place that we are and why people believe the things that they believe and oppose the things they oppose. And it's particularly true of the Civil War, because there's so many reasons for the Civil War, and it involves so many constitutional issues that to understand American constitutional law, it's impossible to ignore things like the questions about states' rights or slavery or issues that were involved in that. So you really do have to study the history to understand why we are in the position we're in today.
No, you.
No, me.
So we're both trying to talk at the same time.
So when did you talk about the Civil War amendments that were, I'm assuming, added to the Constitution? Is that when things started to turn?
Well, I mean, there's really no time at which things started to turn in American history. I mean, I know some people who think that everything went to hell with the Louisiana Purchase. And you know, which was in 1803. So if that's the case, then things went bad pretty quickly, right? But it's just that things have changed over time, and we today have a weird constitutional order. Like every legal system has its weirdness, and the reason why ours happens to have certain features is because of the Civil War amendments. We passed, especially the 14th Amendment, which radically changed the ways that the federal government of the states relate to individuals in America. It used to be, when the Founding Fathers first wrote the Constitution, they created a federal government that was restrained by the Bill of Rights, for example. But the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states when the Constitution was first written. And it wasn't until 1868, when the 14th Amendment was passed, that states were required to respect your right to free speech or your right to religious freedom or your right to private property or due process of law. Before 1868, the federal government had to respect those rights, but states had a lot broader freedom to violate your rights and censor your speech and take away your private property, and there was really nothing you could do about it. So what the 14th Amendment did was it added a layer of protection and said, from now on, if the states violate your freedom, you can sue them in federal court, or you can get the federal government to protect you against your own state. Or at least that's how it was supposed to be. But unfortunately, due to some Supreme Court decisions that came out very quickly thereafter, some of your rights are protected and some of your rights aren't protected. And so we have to try in the future, I think, to revisit those Supreme Court decisions and try and get stronger protections for individual rights under the Constitution.
Wow. And it seems like all these, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people think that the minute, you know, we had the revolution and the minute we wrote the Constitution, I think a lot of people have the feeling that, or have a mindset that nothing changed. And things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
And here we are again, we're at that, I don't know, I think when things change, it's you feel like you're just kind of in a straitjacket. And I think that's where we are now. We're going to go one direction or another, just like we did back then in the 1800s.
Yeah, and I think one of the great things that I see happening with the Tea Party is people are paying a lot more attention to questions about the Constitution than they did previously. You know, the Constitution is first of all, it's a very simple document. Every American can read and understand the Constitution. The original is only 4 pages long. Anybody can read this thing and understand it. I always joke that it actually takes years of higher education at America's greatest law schools to misunderstand the Constitution the way that the Supreme Court so often does. But not only can people understand it, but they ought to understand it. The Constitution is written for us. It is too important for us to leave the Constitution to a bunch of self-appointed experts in the legal community to read it and tell you what it says. That is a very dangerous thing to do. The Constitution is a people's document, and the people really need to read and understand what its provisions and ensure that it's followed the way that it was intended to be followed. And unfortunately, especially because of the progressive movement of the 1900s, between 1880 and 1930 or so, Americans really left the whole issue up to supposed experts who ended up rewriting, essentially, large parts of the Constitution, expanding federal power and eliminating protections for individual rights, especially private property rights and economic liberty.
Well, it's interesting. Their plan has kind of worked against them because a lot, you know, much of the reason that we haven't paid, you know, close attention to all these things is because we were working, raising families, you know, and people were working, raising families. And now, you know, people aren't working. And
they have a lot more time on their hands.
Right.
So, I mean, you look back on it. I mean, shoot, when the Tea Party started, you know, this was, what, a couple of years after the business that my husband and I worked for had closed. And so I would never have had time to be this involved. But we had had the collapse of a couple of businesses, and I had nothing but time on my hands, which is the first time in my adult life that had ever taken place.
Right.
And so I look at a lot of the folks that are really, really heavily participating, and we would not have been able to do this if we were still doing what we were doing 20, 30 years ago, working. So, you know, when you control everybody and you put government in the forefront and you kill off private industry and you create a nation of paupers, the bad part is they can read.
Yeah.
This isn't the Middle Ages, you know. It was interesting that you bring up the Tea Party. I was on my treadmill this morning, and one of the stories was the occupiers in D.C. are going to have to get thrown out of there. It was from a couple days ago. I had it on DVR, but the occupiers have to get thrown out because there are a bunch of rats there. The occupiers were being occupied was the name of the story.
I was kind of chuckling.
I'm like, let's see. I watched a story this morning about the occupiers have rats, you know, and the Tea Party formed, and everybody's reading the Constitution. I'm thinking, there you go, folks. There's the difference.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a sharp contrast. I've been to a couple Tea Party rallies myself, and I don't remember it being dirty, nasty people there demanding to get money stolen from other people so that they can enjoy.
Yeah,
I don't remember any vulgarity or violence or violating vagrancy laws.
Yeah, you didn't need a sleeping
nobody peeing in public.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't need a sleeping bag. But it's funny because even as recently as last night, I was looking at a video of a public meeting, and that's a whole nother topic. You know what's going on with these public meetings, but these folks are pressing back on the One Bay Area, we'll call it the plan they have down there, and people are starting to push back on it, and it's funny that one lady has been a Democrat since, I think she said 1974, she considers herself liberal, and she was filming, and she was, I mean, actively pressing back on this. She's a forensic real estate appraiser, so she knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, when they rezone all this stuff and people don't have control of their private property, and one guy got in her face, and he's like, you know, must be nice to believe everything the Koch brothers tell you.
Oh gosh,
and yeah. I was like,
well, you know, I guess sad. This is as good a time as any to confess to the world that actually, if it weren't for the Koch brothers, I would be a socialist, but. They're actually paying me they're paying me to believe in free enterprise and economic liberty and private property rights. I guess I should just come clean.
That's awesome. We finally have a connection to the Koch brothers. I'm excited. We're always saying we don't even know who they are, where they are.
They've always said we did.
Or how they connect, and they always blame us for that. I can finally take that blame with some knowledge.
Actually, I have to be honest. I'd much prefer Pepsi.
You know, me too.
Top that, Bob. What do you got for us for music on that one, huh? He's stuck.
We're in the Pepsi generation.
There you go. What he doesn't pull off of off the web, he makes up himself. We need to take another swift break here. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. Oops, we were almost back. We almost took a swifter break than I planned on.
Doggone static electricity.
Bob hit the button. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. We'll be right back here at the home of Free Fire Media.
I left town 2 years ago and moved on up to Idaho. But swore that I'd be back again, pick up where I left off, old man.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'll be giving away when we all live together. We're talking about together now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'll be giving away when we all live together.
Welcome back to We the People Radio.
All that friendliness in one place.
Isn't that nice?
That was like Kumbaya, only different.
Kinda. We are with Tim Sandifer of the Pacific Legal Foundation. We're talking about private property rights, the Constitution, and the erosion of our Constitution by the powers that be. And, you know, I wanted to remind people to go to our media page at wethepeople.us, and what you'll find on there, wethepeopleradio.us, you will find a great bio on Tim Sandifer, as well as several videos that Robert has put on there. One is the Pacific Legal Foundation and the Sacketts of Idaho taking on the EPA at the Supreme Court. Another is Tim Sandifer talking about his book, The Right to Earn a Living, on Reason TV, which I watched and really enjoyed. There is about an hour and a half video with Tim talking about private property rights in the 21st century. There is a message to We the People from President Reagan. So it's really worth going on to wethepeopleradio.us. It's very user-friendly and stock full of great information.
You can also sign up for updates on there. The update for this program is going to come after the show, which is a little snafu there, but you'll still get the update, and you can decide which ones you want and which ones you don't. So,
you know, I was
got
checking
some good features coming on there.
I was checking my BlackBerry on the break, and I got this email from some news source that says the Tea Party is dead. And the thing that occurred to me,
we'll have to scrap it and do this whole show again now.
Well, the thing that's kind of funny is, you know, we talk about how the massive majority of Americans weren't paying attention because they were busy working hard, and trust me, the Tea Party is not dead. It is the same people, and they're still working hard. They're working hard. They're hitting the pavement, getting petitions signed. They're learning about public meetings. They're going to public meetings. They're bringing in speakers. They're developing radio shows. The Tea Party is so far from dead, you can't imagine.
And Tim, wouldn't you agree the Tea Party is more of an idea than a thing?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And being an idea, and not just one idea, but being a group of people who share general values, of course, even a lot of people within the Tea Party disagree amongst themselves. This is a national conversation. This is democracy at work. And I think it really is funny how the left shows its true colors when it condemns the Tea Party after claiming that it stands for democracy and conversation and all this sort of thing and civility, when in fact there's nothing I know of that's more civil and democratic than a Tea Party meeting. These people get together and talk about their ideas, and they're going to have conflicts amongst themselves, and they're going to sort those conflicts out. And that, so something like that can't die. That's what our society is supposed to be. If it'll evolve over time, and maybe a new political party will form out of it, or maybe not, or maybe a movement or something. But it's, of course, it's not going to die. It's a very healthy development, and it's what a democratic, law-abiding society is supposed to be about.
Yeah, and the best part about having no membership and having it basically be a mindset is they can't throw you out of the park. I mean, we're never going to get rats.
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't have to do the sleepover and, you know, all that stuff. It just, it's very unnecessary. You know, you mentioned something in the last segment that I was curious what your take would be. The, you know, that when people go to vote, you know, each time there's a ballot, there are judges, for the most part, on these ballots at some level. And that's always the part where people feel like, uh-oh. You know, there's no information. Judges obviously don't campaign. It's probably against the rules, I'm not sure. But it's difficult to find information about them, and when you do, it's complicated.
It is, and if you find how to learn more information about these judges, please let me know, because I have no idea. Unfortunately, it's very often it's just well-known or well-positioned lawyers in the community who decide to run for these offices. And most of them are conscientious public servants, and you really don't have to worry much about them. And the whole idea of judge elections was not really so much to choose judges as it is to restrain judges. I mean, we all know about the Rose Byrd case back in the 1980s, where some judges on the California Supreme Court did some things that a lot of people thought went too far, and so they got thrown off the court. And that's what the whole judicial election system is really intended for, not so much to choose candidates as to restrain the judges who are already on the bench.
So if people have no clue who these people are, do you know, this is kind of puts you on the spot here, but do you recommend they just vote yes, or they vote, or they vote no, or?
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, because it's just really, I did find a site, and I'm sorry, I forgot my glasses today, but I did find a site last year, and if somebody looks on the Tea Party website and finds it, maybe you could put it on the chat for us. But it was in the elections on the elections page on the site, and I did find a guy who really did some pretty good research, and had a lot of the issues, you know, when they list all these court cases, who's got time to sit down and, you know, plow through these court cases? And when you get done, you don't really know what you read a lot of the time. So anyway, I was curious about that, because when we talk about the Constitution being rewritten, it's obviously not rewritten, you know, down the road at a diner. I mean, it's happening in the court system.
Yeah,
that's true. Although, you know, in California, it's local judges, it's trial court judges who are elected, and the appellate judges are appointed by the governor and then are subject to retention elections. So you don't really have the power to choose people to sit on the California Supreme Court, for instance. You can throw them off, but you can't really pick them.
Right.
The trial judges, though, I mean, that is an important job, and, you know, there have been some pretty corrupt trial judges. I remember there was a case down in Orange County of a trial judge who was downloading child pornography onto his computer. And so, and that was only, what, 10 years ago or so. So it is an important restraint.
Do you find that, I mean, you argue cases all over the country?
Yeah.
So do you find that the politics of the courts around the country reflect the politics of the area, or the courts pretty, you know, because they always say, oh, the courts in California, they're all lefties, you know, and this and that. Is that actually true from your perspective?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, because I would have to say that what I see more of is a difference between state and federal judges. State judges tend to be a lot more attentive to the political trends, not the democratic trends, but what's considered politically correct among the elites. Judges in California, for instance, tend to be a lot more tuned into what the political elites in the state are interested in.
Federal judges
are a lot more independent because, of course, federal judges are appointed by the president and are not elected. So federal judges are a lot more willing to resist a popular movement within a state, whereas state judges tend to be a lot more timid about doing things that they think will be unpopular.
Like, you know, are we talking about big social issues like gay marriage and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, not just that, but economic matters also. I mean, for instance, I work on cases involving businesses and restrictions on economic freedom. And a lot of these are imposed at the local level. So government at the city or state level very often puts in licensing laws or other kinds of restrictions, or in private property matters, eminent domain is usually done at the local level. Well, local judges aren't willing to restrain local governments from taking away people's property for private development. And they're not very often willing to protect a business against unfair licensing restrictions or other kinds of laws. Whereas federal judges, because they're not elected, are more autonomous. They're more able to resist something that the local government has done.
Well, and
that's a broad generalization, and there are many exceptions to that. But I think that's what I see more than direct political influence.
And that's really similar to our bureaucracies versus our elected politicians, because so many people think that if we can just get somebody else into office, everything will change. But what they fail to recognize is that a lot of the problems with government overreach come from unelected bureaucracies.
That's exactly right. That's a very important point. It's not just a lot of, by far the most of the laws that you live under in your daily life are not passed by elected officials. They're not signed by the governor or the president. They're enacted by hired government bureaucrats who work for administrative agencies like OSHA or the EPA or something like that. And if you are affected by one of their rules and you complain about it to your congressman, the most your congressman can really do is write a letter to the administrative agency, and that's basically it. And so most of the government under which we live our lives is unelected, so-called experts doing what they think you ought to do, I mean, deciding what they think you ought to do with your life. And there's really very little check or balance against them.
Except that we are finding up here in Northern California that public pressure is a powerful tool. And when
it can be, but this is an important point. Although that's true, it's true that political agitation can protect you against the government. It really shouldn't be that way.
True.
We should not live our lives in a situation where we have to rally our friends and have a protest at the city council in order to live our daily lives. The reason we have a constitution is so that we don't have to do that kind of thing, so that our rights are protected at the outset, and we don't have to go out and try and rally politics behind us to protect us. A healthy constitutional order would be one where the government respects our rights and lets us live our lives, so that we don't have to go and spend our time on politics. Like you said, we have families to raise, we have jobs to do, we have houses to take care of, we have lots of things to do with our lives. And in a healthy society, we wouldn't have to waste our time on politics. We would have a constitution that's ensured that elected officials or appointed bureaucratic officials respected our freedom and left us alone.
Well, and I think that for a long time we thought that's what we had.
I that's right, and a lot of people still think that's what we have, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Exactly, and you know, it's funny. I mean, I like to make distinctions because I think a lot of us are in this deep enough now that we can see the nuances. It's no longer, we no longer need to take a broad brush to understand. And we spend a lot more time pressing back on regulation than we do on politics necessarily. You know, I think so much of it is here comes agency number whatever, and they've got these new regulations they want to impose. And the minute you hear that, if you don't turn out en masse and find out what they're up to and get people to press back, all of a sudden you find out you've lost more, you know, more access to your private property. There's some, you know, land trust deal coming in. There's another conservancy move being made.
It's very hard. It's very hard to keep on top of what regulatory agencies do. I mean, if anybody out there has ever tried to read a regulation in the Federal Register, I mean, these things are are dozens of pages long. They're written in incredibly complicated scientific or pseudoscientific language. They're published in places that nobody ever actually reads. And then you have to try and get a group of people together and say, hey, we're going to go down to the meeting of the Federal Refrigeration Agency to protest their restriction of the size of refrigerator motor parts to 2 inches instead of 3 inches. I mean, come on. But when you add those things together, they impose huge costs on us, not just in terms of making our refrigerators or whatever more expensive, but restricting the economic opportunities for people who need jobs. If you make it more expensive to produce refrigerators, that means that they're going to hire fewer people to make refrigerators. And so the more regulations you have, the fewer economic opportunities there are for people who need jobs and fewer refrigerators for everybody.
Well, and the incandescent light bulb is a perfect example of that.
Oh, great example.
You know, you've got this government intervention, which has now created a monopoly with Philips and GE, and now they're making these curlicue light bulbs filled with mercury, but they're made in China.
Yeah.
And they say that this is good for the environment. Well, okay, maybe it is, but why shouldn't I, as the consumer, get the right to choose what's more important to me? Because somebody's going to choose. Somebody's going to decide the trade-off between environmental protection and having a light bulb that works. Because we could have a perfectly clean environment by destroying every bit of human civilization, and then the environment would be perfectly clean. But nobody wants that. What we want is a trade-off between a clean enough environment on one hand and light bulbs that work on the other. And who's going to make that trade-off? That's the real question. And the decision is either that trade-off is chosen by consumers deciding on their own behalf what they want, or on the other hand, having that decision made for them by isolated, supposedly expert bureaucrats in some gigantic building in Washington, D.C., whom you have no control over, and if you do sue them, then the courts are going to defer to them and say, oh, well, they're the experts, so we'll just follow what they say. I mean, that's really the decision. Do we make these decisions for ourselves in our own lives, or do we leave these decisions up to unelected bureaucrats in giant buildings in Washington, D.C., 3,000 miles away?
I think I can hear everyone at home going, the second one. Okay, we need to take a really quick break here. Or we're going to be up against 9 o'clock, and we're just going to have breaks forever. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes here at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
I know paradise ain't lost, and there is still a chance that we'll survive. If there's a God up in the sky, and if there's any justice in this world,
you're joining We the People Radio. And if you haven't before, it's time you did. Tell your friends. And for those that are listening, we thank you. We're pretty sure we have a cult following.
Yeah, because they're all out there. Let's see, they've decided the Tea Party has, I don't have the glasses, so thank everyone on the chat room for typing in all caps. But it said, so something flew by, and I was like, what did that say? It said something about all red meat, the Tea Party's all red meat. And so, we're going to start a butcher shop, I guess, called All the People Meats or something.
There you go. So, Tim, before we
they're all over the place
before we hit our 5 hour our 5 minute break for the second hour, our national break, I'm the comedic relief here, just so you know. Can you kind of give us a little history on the Pacific Legal Foundation, and then maybe we can segue into the second hour into the case in Idaho?
Yeah, the Pacific Legal Foundation is a nonprofit legal foundation that was founded in 1973, and what we do is we sue the government for a living. Which is,
nice.
I always tell people, it's the greatest job in the world, and we like it so much that we do it for free. We don't charge our clients when we represent them. We just fight in cases that we think are worthwhile, and we're supported by donations from people who agree with the kinds of cases that we do. And we focus primarily on private property rights, protecting private property against either eminent domain or regulations that destroy the value of your property. We focus on racial equality, challenging government programs that prefer people of one race over people of another race. And in a sensible environmental policy, we oppose government restrictions on private property rights and other kinds and economic activity that are imposed in the name of environmental extremism and have really devastating effects on real people's lives. And then we have some minor projects also, and I run one of those, which is our Economic Liberty Project, which is designed to protect private entrepreneurs rather against licensing restrictions and other kinds of limits on their economic freedom.
I've got a candidate for you. Big case too.
Oh, good. Hmm. So now, are your attorneys on staff? Do they work pro bono? Do you have a combo of folks working for you?
And we have about 20 attorneys who work for us in offices in California, Washington State, Florida, and Hawaii.
Hmm, okay.
And we work across the country. And although our lawyers are paid, but they're paid by donations mm-hmm. from people who agree with the kind of work that we do.
Now you're familiar with Karen Bud Fallon, who is
I know her.
Yeah, she was on our show at one time, and so she I guess does a similar practices a similar type of law, but she does try to protect private property rights as well. And I apparently you guys have presented cases together with her, but is that along the similar lines of the type of law that you practice?
Well, yes, and in fact, we work with a network of lawyers across the country, even attorneys who don't work for Pacific Legal Foundation. There are lots of lawyers who agree with the kind of stuff that we do, and so in their spare time, they will do a case or two on the side that defends private property rights or economic freedom, and we help them with those, too.
Okay,
that's nice. And then your main offices are where?
Well, our main office is in Sacramento, California, but we also have offices in Bellevue, Washington, and in Coral Gables, Florida. And we have an office in Honolulu also.
Cool. So if somebody thinks that they've got a decent case that would be something kind of up your alley, go to the website. Is there kind of an interest form you can fill out?
Yeah, you go to the website, and we have a form to fill out on our website if you have a potential case for us, and then the attorneys will review that and see whether it's something that we want to do. I mean, we get a lot of people who have important cases against the government or have been mistreated in an important way by the government, and we can only take a small fraction of those cases, the cases that we think will set legal precedent that will protect other people. So it's unfortunate that we have to turn a lot of good cases away, but we depend on people coming to us with their legal problems so that we can try and take something potentially to the U.S. Supreme Court, like in the Sackett case, and protect people in the future against government abuse.
So again, then, you primarily sue the federal government. Do you work at the state level?
We do work at both the state and federal levels. We've done cases I've done cases in Texas, in Missouri, in Florida, in Washington, and all sorts of different states. And we will often work with lawyers in those states, or we have a lot of people on staff who are licensed to practice in different states. So we are a nationwide organization.
Very cool. Well, we've got a couple minutes here before we take the 5-minute news break. So to help people carry over that break and get a viewpoint of what we're going to be talking about after, can you give them a thumbnail sketch on the Idaho case?
Yes. Well, this is a case challenging something that the EPA does, which is called a compliance order. And these are orders that the EPA issues to people when it thinks that they're in violation of federal environmental law. For in this case, it was the Clean Water Act. And these compliance orders arrive, and it says, you're in violation of the law. You have to do such and such in order to come back in compliance with the law. And such is a huge long list of very expensive and time-consuming things. I mean, the Sacketts were ordered to plant certain kinds of shrubs on their property, to plant trees at certain distances from each other, to remove anything, of course, that you put on the property. And all that costs tens of thousands of dollars. And if you fail to comply with this compliance order, you will be fined $37,500 per day until you come into compliance with the order. And when the Sacketts asked for a hearing, they learned that the federal government doesn't give you a hearing over these things. They simply issue the order, and you're required to comply. And later on, if you have failed to comply, the government can sue you And at that time, you can defend yourself. But by that time, of course, the fine is, has now reached the levels of millions of dollars. You're not allowed to get a hearing to say that you are not in violation of federal environmental law.
And for all the people out there listening that, that in their minds are imagining that the Sacketts were purchasing acres upon acres upon acres of land, this was roughly half an acre, just basically a large lot in a subdivision. Am I correct?
That's right. That's right.
And so it can happen to you.
And their neighbors had all built their dream houses, so they thought that they could. But it turns out that the government had decided that their property was a wetland.
When we come back, we have to get the definition of a wetland.
Exactly. And
if you find out, please tell me.
It doesn't mean that the land is wet.
Are you kidding?
No, it means whatever the government says it.
I went to a North Coast Water Quality Board meeting. They couldn't decide the definition of agriculture. We're all in deep trouble. Hey, so Bob's got some fun music for us to go out on. We'll be back with you in 5 minutes after the news here at KCNR.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Jumping in on hour two of We the People Radio. The telephone number is 605-4567. We're chatting and streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. Really encourage you to check out that webpage. There's tons of information on it, everything about today's speaker and every show we've ever done. And again, no excuses not to pass the information along to everyone you know, no matter where they are. Today we're with Tim Sandifer of the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we've been talking about constitutional rights of citizens to private property, the erosion of those rights, the differences between elected officials and unelected bureaucrats. And we kind of chit-chatted about a lot of really good things in the first hour, but now we're going to get down to real life.
After we take a call.
Oh, you got it. But before we...
Because we left him hanging there for 5 minutes.
Before we take the call real quick, when we get... We're talking about a real case, real people, and real situation where the EPA came down on them hard. And for all those folks out there that think this could never happen to me, I think this story will change your opinion about that. So before we get back with Tim and get into that case...
I don't know who it is, but...
We're going to take a caller.
It's Brian from Reading.
Hit it, Brian. You're on.
Hello.
Hey.
Are you there?
We are.
Oh, great. Hey. I had a quick question. This topic of the water rights issue going on in Idaho has been quite the conversation. I've been listening to it a lot this week on the radio. Had a couple questions. Could you possibly give some of us some tips out there who may be looking at different states to move because California is getting so bad?
No, I'm sorry, Brian. You're a captive of California. We're not going to help you.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'll find one way to get out of this prison. But anyway, maybe some tips of where to go online maybe to research that state and the city that they're going to move to as well, because you got the state and the city ordinance and laws that you have to obey. So that way we don't get stuck when we're buying some property out there and find out, oh my God, you know, I just bought this property, I live in California, and I get this letter coming to me saying, you know, I've got to do something quick. Maybe you can get some tips on what we can do to research to see what area in what state and what city might be good to move to without having these kind of surprises.
Well, and Tim might have some tips on some areas across the country that are less restricting, because he does fight cases all over the country. What do you think, Tim?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it's true that some states have different policies and are more friendly toward property owners than our other states. California is about the worst you can get in that regard. But unfortunately, so many of these environmental policies are being imposed by federal government bureaucracy that it's getting harder and harder to find a place in the United States where you can use your private property as you ought to be free to do. And that's another problem with the expansion of federal bureaucracy, is that the whole purpose of our federalist system with 50 different states is that, in theory, if the government of one state goes crazy and starts really abusing people, you can pack up and move to another state that's more friendly. And that creates a sort of competitive pressure amongst the states to rein in government abuse. But because now so much is being done at the federal level, it's getting harder and harder to discipline our government officials by being able to move somewhere else if you don't like it. So I don't know of any place where you can go to get very specific information about what states are better in what regard. Lots of different organizations publish reports on different states that focus on particular issues. So, for instance, there are business organizations that every year will publish a report that say what state is the best to do business in and that sort of thing. But I don't know of any central database that you can go to that will tell you what states respect property rights more and what don't. And, you know, a lot of these states don't even have their own websites, or their websites aren't very well maintained. Even California has really poor websites when it comes to the government. And local government, especially cities, they very often just don't have any websites that are of any use at all.
I think.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
I appreciate that. And we really appreciate your show. And you guys are a wealth of knowledge, and we thank you for that.
Hopefully you're hearing things that you're not hearing anywhere else. That's the point.
Oh, I can guarantee you. I stopped listening to other radio stations. I'm pretty much glued to you guys 24/7. So
thanks.
Take care.
No pressure.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so Tim, maybe we can kind of backpedal a little bit and lay this case out in layman's terms for the listeners. And my point always is, we always think that it happens to the other guy, but this is a pretty basic situation.
We're all becoming the other guy pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's my point. So can you lay the case out for folks that haven't been following it in the news?
Certainly. So there's a couple named Mike and Chantel Sackett, and they bought property in Idaho that they wanted, a small piece of property that they wanted to build their dream house on. And they, you know, their neighbors had been allowed to build houses, and so they own a small construction company, so they knew that they would need to get permits and things, so they went down to the government, and they got all the permits that they needed, and they thought they were ready to go. And then they started laying down some foundation on the property, and they got an envelope from the Environmental Protection Agency, and inside the envelope was a compliance order, which is an order that says that the EPA is issued by a single government bureaucrat, and it says, we think that you are in violation of the Clean Water Act because, surprise, your land is a wetland, and you're not allowed to do anything on it without getting a federal permit. And a federal permit is a huge deal. I mean, it costs a lot of money and takes many years to get one of these federal permits. And by not getting a federal permit, this order said, you're in violation of the Clean Water Act, and what you have to do is comply with the Act by doing all these things. And then it listed out what the Sacketts were required to do. They were required to take out the foundation they had put in. They were required to plant certain kinds of plants on their property. They were required to—it specified how far apart they had to plant these plants. They had to allow inspectors on their land. They had to fence it off for 3 years so nobody could go on the property. They had to permanently allow EPA officials to come on the property to ensure that they were in compliance and all this sort of thing. And then at the end it said, and if you don't comply with this order, you will be fined $37,500 per day in fines. Now the Sacketts, of course, they didn't think that their property was a wetland, and so they said, well, we'd like to have a hearing so that we can argue that our property isn't a wetland. We think this is some kind of mistake. And the EPA said, you aren't entitled to a hearing. You don't get a hearing. You have to either comply now or wait for us to sue you. And when we sue you, yeah, then you can argue that your property isn't a wetland. But by that time, the $37,500 per day fine has accumulated to millions and millions and millions of dollars.
So
we sued the government saying that this is either not what the law actually says, or this is a violation of the Constitution.
Now, so Tim, we've all established that we don't know what a wetlands is. Is that just a convenient excuse for the federal government to take control of your land?
Largely. A wetland, in theory, is a property that is not actually water, but is so, you know, it's routinely flooded by water or something like that in such a way that it's considered part of the waters of the United States, because the Clean Water Act allows the government to regulate the waters of the United States. But this has been so broad. I mean, wetland isn't in the statute. That's a regulation. That's something that the Army Corps of Engineers and the Environmental Protection Agency have come up with. And it's basically whatever the government says it is. And in the Sagas case, they're quite a distance from any water. They're certainly far from any navigable water of the United States. When you hear that phrase, you wouldn't actually think of something like the Mississippi River. But until recently, the federal government was arguing that water of the United States meant any water that could eventually travel into the Mississippi River over any amount of time and any amount of distance, which, of course, means every molecule of water on Earth would be subject to federal control, right? So Pacific Legal Foundation sued the government over that about 5 years ago in a case called Rapanos, and the Supreme Court said, no, that's too much. The federal government can't do that. But then they didn't tell us what they can do, so it's still kind of up in the air as to what exactly is a wetland and what the government can control and all that sort of thing. The one thing that we do know is when the government says it's a wetland, it's basically a wetland. The property owner can hire a whole bunch of scientists to prove that it's not, and the government doesn't even have to listen to them. So the idea that you have private property in many of these places is a fiction, because the government can declare that that this property is subject to their jurisdiction, and you have to get one of their permits, which they're not going to give you, in order to do anything with your property.
Wow.
It's shocking. It's so shocking that during the oral argument in the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, Justice Alito said to the government's lawyer, you know, if you explain how this works to most people, they would say that sort of thing can't happen in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, you felt like you were probably doing pretty well?
Yeah, that part was one of the highlights for us, definitely.
Yeah, you're like, oh, good. They're kind of blown away. This is good.
And so what happened was we filed a suit against the government arguing that either the Sackets should be given a hearing or this thing is unconstitutional, because it certainly isn't due process of law to start fining people tens of thousands of dollars a day and then not even give them a hearing. Unfortunately, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled against us, as, to be fair, every federal court that has ruled on this issue has ruled against the property owner. So we went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that case was argued on Monday by my colleague Damian Schiff, who did a fantastic job and I think really demonstrated to the whole world that was paying attention to this case just how abusive these government bureaucracies really are. This is not a thing, some kind of childish, either you're in favor of clean water or you're not kind of story, the way that the liberals like to claim it is. To them, that, you know, they just think the world is like Bambi or something. When what this is about is government bureaucrats who think they know better than you do what to do with your private property, simply telling you to do what they say or else. And that's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution says government cannot say.
And you know what? And when we talk about people owning private property, the thing that comes to mind is massive amounts of property. How big was this parcel?
If I remember right, it was 0.63 acres. So it's about a half an acre, less than two-thirds of an acre of land in a rural community in Idaho.
Wow. And you see, we deal a lot with, you know, farmers and ranchers and this and that. But you know what? We've got a story like this here in Reading.
We
and
do.
Maybe Comrade Ann will call in and give us a thumbnail sketch. That'd be kind of fun. Maybe we'll call her on the break here, huh? Okay, so folks, we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about this issue. And you're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
So I drifted on down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to do me a late night talk show. Now I've worked my way down home again near the Boise, Idaho. That's how this business goes. I am the morning DJ at WOLD.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460 530-605-4567.
Judge,
Don't ever assume that the music means nothing.
I'm like, what's he saying?
Because here comes the judge. Okay.
Hey, trust me, the music is as much a part of the show as anything.
Yeah, I believe that one was actually dubbed off of a 45 RPM record.
Wow.
Classic Motown for you.
Awesome.
Bob goes to the mat for the show.
He does. Thanks, he's Bob. So great. Welcome back to We the People Radio with Tim Sandifer. So, Tim, so we've determined that they're... Okay, here's my question. How is it that these people got targeted? I mean, they don't have a huge...
Oh, good question.
They don't have a huge piece of property. They've got neighbors. What triggered them? What was the red flag?
They got turned in on attack watch by their neighbors, didn't they?
Mm.
That is a very good question, because a lot of the time it is something like that, where it's just, you know, a neighbor doesn't like that you're going to cut off their view or something, so they call the agency. And under the statute, under the Clean Water Act, the government can issue one of these compliance orders on the basis of, quote, any information whatever, end quote. Now, if you think about that, that's astonishing. We have a justice system in this country that's based on almost 1,000 years of common law precedent that has rules about what kind of evidence is allowed and what kind of evidence isn't allowed. We have rules against using hearsay. We have rules against using documents that haven't been authenticated. But here we have a statute that says the government can come in and order you to do something with your property, order you to allow government agents onto your property to search your property, can order you to pay tens of thousands of dollars a day in fines, not give you a hearing over whether or not you actually did violate the law, and can do all of this on the basis of any information whatsoever, including just hearsay or an anonymous telephone call. That really is shocking, and that's why Justice Alito said it's hard to believe that something like this can go on in the United States.
Communist United States. Dead silence. Hey, yeah. So do these
sorry,
folks...
Sorry, I'm just sitting here staring at you.
I know. Do these folks have any idea what triggered this? I mean, do they...
No, I don't believe so. I think to this day we don't know what it was that got the government on their trail or anything.
And have you been deluged with calls from other people who go, hey, that happened to me too?
Well, me personally, no. I actually rarely work on environmental law at Pacific Legal Foundation because I find it so complicated and hard to understand. I leave it up to my colleagues who are the real experts. But when you see a case like this that so clearly violates due process of law, it doesn't really take any kind of environmental expertise or anything to understand how this is intolerable under the Constitution.
So, Tim, what was the Supreme Court ruling then?
The Supreme Court has not ruled on the case yet.
That's in June, right?
That's right. They'll probably issue a decision sometime in early spring or summer. The Supreme Court almost always issues its decisions before the July 4th break, because that's when the court shuts down for the summer, and they come back in October. And so they'll issue the most controversial decisions right before the July 4th break. But this case probably won't be very controversial, because it looks, at least from the oral argument, like most of the justices are on our side. So we're kind of thinking that the decision might come out in June or maybe even earlier.
So they didn't have a ruling this week. They basically just presented their findings, their opinion.
We have the oral argument on Monday.
Oh, and okay.
Oral arguments are a really cool thing. I mean, it's an amazing thing to see. You go into the Supreme Court of the United States in a giant marble room with all of the sculptures, and the justices come out from behind their red curtain.
Are they all wearing wigs?
No, we got rid of it. Actually, you know, it's a funny story about that. The wigs is of course an English tradition that judges would wear wigs.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently early on the U.S. Supreme Court did wear wigs, but it was Justice John Marshall, who was appointed by President John Adams, who says, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to wear the bright red robe that English judges do. We're going to wear plain black robes and no wigs to show that the court is part of the democratic situation in the United States. We often think of the Supreme Court as somehow not a non-democratic body, as if it somehow stands outside of popular elections and things. And it doesn't. It's part of the people ruling themselves. The justices are chosen indirectly by the people. We vote for the president and he chooses judges. We vote for the Congress and they confirm judges. So they're part of the democratic system. And what Chief Justice John Marshall wanted to emphasize is that judges aren't like endowed by God with special powers. They're people like we are. And so that's why we don't wear wigs in American courtrooms.
That's pretty cool. And so do you have to have any special, I don't know if credentials is the right word, but to argue in front of the Supreme Court, do you just have to have the right case? Or do you?
Yeah, well, that's really the thing, because the Supreme Court hears about 80 cases per year, and they get asked to take about 8,000. So it's very unusual for the Supreme Court to hear any case, and it's a major deal. It's something that every lawyer aspires to. And Pacific Legal Foundation has been to the Supreme Court, I believe now 7 times, and we have set some very important precedents in the area of private property rights and economic freedom and racial equality.
So, okay, these people live on a normal sized, parcel, and they've got this, huge egregious deal with the EPA, and let's just fast forward. Let's say in June this comes out, and the Supreme Court says, EPA, you guys are mental. What are you doing? You can't do this kind of stuff. What does that do for everybody else? Like, what doors does that potentially open up for other people for redress of grievance?
Yeah, what's the legal precedence that this will set?
Well, probably what it will say is that from now on, the EPA can't just compel people to do stuff in this way. What they have to do instead is warn people that they're in violation of the law or that the EPA thinks they're violating the law, and then allow them to challenge that and go to court. If they think that they're not violating the law, they should have the opportunity to tell their side of the story. And so, the environmentalist community, of course, at least some of the environmentalist community is making it out like this. The Supreme Court's going to, destroy Bambi and ruin the clean water for little babies or something.
Of course.
But of course, it's not what's going on. If you're violating environmental law, you will still be prosecuted. It's just that during the process, you'll actually have a chance to make your case, which is a shocking proposition to a lot of progressives in this country. Now, to be fair, many responsible environmental leaders, many of the best environmentalists, the smartest environmentalist lawyers on the left have accepted that this is an egregious process and that the Sacketts were mistreated and that we deserve to win this case. So even the environmentalist community largely thinks that the EPA went too far.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Because, see, I'm looking at, like, in California, North Coast Water Quality Board is looking at tailwater things up like in, well, everywhere, I'm sure, but up in Siskiyou County. And that falls into their total maximum daily load requirement. So that takes into account things like temperature and naturally occurring algae in the water and all that. And now, if that water flows through your property, you're responsible for that. You got to fix the temperature of the water, and they're trying to make them, plant a bunch of different kinds of trees. My ears perked up at that part. I'm like, well, maybe this will help those guys too, because they're trying to micromanage their environment. And these guys they've got miles and miles and miles of open space, and they're requiring all the river system and everything to be shaded. The water all has to have shade on it. Well, where on earth does that naturally occur? Isn't that why we have darkness?
Yeah.
Isn't that why God invented nighttime?
if we could put Ann Meyer on briefly.
Yeah.
She's having issues with her voice, so she's not going to stay on very long, but she did want to ask Mike a question.
Or Tim.
Tim, okay.
I mean, Tim.
Yeah, Tim, these are the folks that... Okay, let's do this. Let's take a really quick break, and we'll do it early, and that way Ann gets the most... No, let's not do that. Bob's shaking his head. We take all our cues nonverbal here. Okay, go, Ann.
Hi, I apologize for my voice.
Don't apologize. We love it.
Surgery on Friday.
Ooh.
Recovering. So, anyway, I just heard your guest say that Pacific Legal has argued 7 times in front of the Supreme Court. And I know in 2006, they won in, I believe it's Rapanos versus United States. However, the Army Corps of Engineers has ignored that ruling, and they continue to violate private property rights regarding navigable streams on the upcountry or valley areas or something. I'm not sure. How can the Supreme Court decide against Army Corps of Engineers and they continue to defy that ruling? I'd like to know how we fight that.
What do you think, Tim?
Well, it is true that not only the Rapanos case, but some other cases that we've done that we have won. For instance, a case called Nolan back in 1987 that said local governments can't restrict your private property rights in certain ways. Lots of the time, the Supreme Court will announce its decision, and governments will just shrug and ignore these decisions, and you have to sue them again and sue them again and sue them again, and it's kind of like, you know, holding back a deluge. I actually have a Calvin and Hobbes comic strip on my door that shows Calvin running around the house to catch a fly, and then he lets it go outside the front door, and he's real proud of himself, and as he turns around, three more flies fly into the house mm-hmm. behind him. And that's my life, in large part. There is a complication with the Rapanos case, and that is that that decision was a 4-4-1 decision, meaning you had four judges on one side, four judges on the other side, and then Justice Kennedy writing this separate opinion that nobody really knows what it means. So what exactly Rapanos said, the exact limits on federal power in that decision are still unclear, and Congress is trying, or some of the Democrats in Congress have been trying to expand federal authority and amend the law to get around the Rapanos case. So it really is a never-ending battle, and we're fighting in courts across the country right now to clarify the Rapanos case and fight back against the government expanding its power.
And for those in Northern California that are listening, our friend Comrade Ann, again, lives in a normal neighborhood. We're not talking acres and acres of land here, and she was forced to rip out 30 to 40 different types of trees that she and her husband had planted on the land they own and pay taxes on by the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, I mean, there were fruit trees and an ash tree. And did you have to saw down the redwoods, too?
Yes, but there were only 16 trees.
Okay. I like to blow things out of proportion just to touch.
That's okay.
Just to make my point.
Oh, now I find out. I'm stuck with her as a co-host. That's great. A year into the show, I find out she's an exaggerator.
16 four-year-old trees.
16 four-year-old trees.
And that was because
they were non-native to the area.
And all your neighbors have trees that are not native as well, I'm assuming?
Exactly.
And your trees were a problem because they were near, what, a ditch or something?
Well, we have a seasonal drainage ditch going through our property that's fed by a culvert from a neighboring subdivision, which is dry approximately 8 months out of the year, but the Army Corps designated it as Waters of the United States. And they don't. And, you know, my big gripe with Army Corps of Engineers is we had the opportunity to amend this to please everybody. Army Corps of Engineers in Sacramento led us to believe that they were going to play ball. Therefore, we paid more money to the green outfit that Brent is overseeing the regulations of the Army Corps. And they just said, when it went through, they took months to decide, which is very common. That's their MO. And then they just slam dunked us, said no. You have to take them out. And I asked Nancy Haley at the Army Corps of Engineers and Commander Leedy by letter, you know, why did you lead us to believe that you were going to cooperate? And the response was a very curt, we'll entertain any idea.
Oh, brother. And what was the fine they were going to hammer you with?
Oh, we could be fined. You know, I have to go through my paperwork, but what I best recall is $2,000 a day we could have been subjected to for every day that we didn't take the trees out. Plus, they would send a crew in to remove everything and then send us a bill.
Even though they're paid by our tax dollars.
Exactly.
So what was the cost of the trees that you had to rip out?
Oh, you know, I'm thinking
ballpark.
The cost of the trees and everything. Well, what we submitted as a billing was over $10,000.
Jeez.
Which essentially we're going to be reimbursed for out of pocket expenses. Maybe I don't know if it'll ever happen.
Was that another thing they entertained?
Yeah, we pretty much chalked it up as a learning experience, and my message to everybody who might be listening is if you're looking to buy a piece of property that says private open space on your preliminary title report, don't count on the developers to tell you the truth.
Yeah, just stay
just
away from
leave.
It.
Just walk away no matter how good you might think it is, because we, you know, We had no idea. We never would have gotten involved with this mess.
Jeez.
So,
it's funny. Someone on the chat room, you've got fans. Somebody writes, oh, no, a seasonal drainage ditch. Get a rope.
Yeah, we're still waiting. Right, we're still waiting for the salmon and the tugboats to come up, but we haven't seen anything yet.
Well, you know, they changed the ferry limits because people are so fat. So, you know, if they do run a ferry system back there, they'll take 200 less passengers because we're all bigger now. I saw that this morning,
anyway,
too.
I'm going to sign off.
Hey, thanks, Ann. Thanks for calling
Bye,
in.
Ann. And don't have surgery without telling us. Come on.
So, Tim, there's your typical California story. Are we ready to take a break here?
We are indeed ready.
We're all screwed up.
It's kind of hard to stop talking about good stuff sometimes.
Well, it's hard to stop bashing the government. Just be honest, Elizabeth, you exaggerator. All right, we'll be right back with you guys in 2 minutes. We'll be back with Tim on his comments there on Ann's issue. KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
Sorry.
That's like the Supreme Court theme song there.
How do I bring back the show with the devil? We have an angel on our side, Tim Sandifer from Pacific Legal Foundation. So, Tim, carry on.
Yeah, talk to us about Ann's deal.
Well, you know, one of the things that the caller said that I thought really stood out is the comment about a non-native species. This is something you see a lot in these cases, is people being told to remove non-native plants from their land. And this is an example of the kind of pseudoscience that goes on with these administrative agencies. What happens is the Congress gets together and they pass the No Bad Things law that says, from now on, bad things are illegal. And we're going to create the Federal Bad Things Agency. And the Federal Bad Things Agency is going to hire a bunch of bureaucrats to decide what is a bad thing and how you're not allowed to do it, and so forth and so on. And so from now on, you and I live our lives not under a law that Congress passed, but under regulations passed by the No Bad Things Agency. And they basically carte blanche to decide what is a bad thing and what
isn't. That's exactly what they do, too. That's just perfect.
And this way, the elected officials can wash their hands of it. They can say, look, I took a strong stand against bad things. You know, but then when you sue, when you say, wait a minute, this is unconstitutional, they say, well, I didn't know that they were doing that. Those were bad bureaucrats. It's their fault, not mine, you know. So that way they can avoid responsibility.
So nobody takes responsibility.
Meanwhile, the No Bad Things Agency has decided that non-native plants are bad things. Well, what is a native plant? Roses aren't native to California, at least not these kinds of roses that I've got in my front yard. These are hybrid tea roses that were designed by genetic engineers in laboratories. These aren't native plants. The tomatoes that we eat, the bananas that we eat, these aren't native. These are genetically engineered plants that have been bred to produce more tomatoes or bananas. Palm trees aren't native to California. They were brought over by developers. Eucalyptus trees aren't native to California. They were brought over by developers in the 19th century.
And when do they decide that your vegetable garden is non-native?
It simply is arbitrary, because the whole idea of a native species in a world that is constantly in flux, in nature that is always changing plants and evolving over time, it's ridiculous to say that scientists can come up with some sort of clearly drawn plan that says, here's how nature ought to look, and if you go beyond these lines, you're in trouble, because nature is constantly changing anyway. And human beings are part of nature. we come in and we build our homes and things, and environmentalists say, oh, well, homes, those aren't natural. Of course they're natural. Human beings have always built homes. The whole idea that you can divide up the world into natural and non-natural, and that experts can tell us what kinds of plants are proper for an area, and that it's bad to plant some kinds of plants and good to plant others, is pseudoscience to the max. 100 years from now, people are going to look back on this kind of stuff and wonder how we could have believed and implemented such nonsense.
Well, and that's the part that sends the taxpayers into absolute convulsions, is not only does this not make any sense, but they're paying for it.
That's right. And paying for it, you know, this is an important thing. A lot of people say, well, it's true that our bureaucracy costs us a lot of money and restricts economic growth and limits job creation, but it's for the greater good. Now, excuse me, but every time the government forces me to spend a dollar on an environmental impact report that is basically just guesswork anyway, that's a dollar that couldn't go to something else. That's a dollar that couldn't go to something that either I think is more important or that might be more important in another way. You know, we talk about, oh, we kind of shrug at the wasteful bureaucracy that we have in this country. But every dollar that's spent on wasteful bureaucracy is a dollar that's not going to cancer research. It's a dollar that's not going to grow new food to feed hungry people in this world. It's not a matter of, oh, well, it's just expensive, but we'll just put up with it. It's a life or death situation, and we should take it very seriously.
Well, and the other thing it's not going to is charity. You know, we always took care of our own, and now with this... you know, we have such a grab going on for regulations and fees, and you know, Governor Brown here in California wants more tax dollars because they're being so fiscally prudent with the ones they already have, and you know, you have that kind of thing going on, so people are not able to do a lot of the things for their own family, much less take care of other people who need it, you know, through churches and things like that. And then you have these stupid regulations. I've got some people that I'm working with that are just trying to build a place on their 5 acres. I mean, they've got plenty of room. They already have a two-story building built. They want to build an apartment in there for the 81-year-old mom. But the county won't work with them. They can build a servant's quarters, but they can't build a guest house for the mother-in-law because it's not zoned for that.
Yes, and you know, it's amazing to think the negative impact on citizenship values that our bureaucracy has. When you punish people for creating jobs, when you punish people for creating wealth, and you reward people for not creating jobs or not creating wealth, you give them, you pay them money because they have been lazy or have screwed up their lives and have not been virtuous, and you pay them with the money that's taken from virtuous, hardworking people, what are you doing to the citizenship values in your community? What are you doing to destroy the kind of emotional and personal bonds with people that make for a healthy society? What is charity? Charity is a sort of overflowing of the spirit for people who feel really good, who have accomplished something. Whenever I have accomplished something that I'm proud of, or I've come into some money that I didn't think that I would, or I'm happy about something, I very often will donate some of it, or even just a little thing. I'm, you know, bring donuts in for my coworkers or something. Why not? You know, that's what charity is about.
It's a spirit.
You harm that when you make it difficult for people to prosper, and you punish them for trying to live upright lives and follow the law.
Well, you're gonna kill the spirit of giving if you're trying to steal everything somebody has.
Well, if
that's right. Remember in the Christmas Carol when Mr. Scrooge says, "My tax dollars go to pay for prisons and workhouses, and those who are badly off must go there." What he's saying is, I'm forced to pay for charity already, so why should I be charitable?
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, people know it's wrong. That's the part that's interesting, and I think that's why people are acting out and willing to step up, and people who have never really participated in a vocal public exchange are willing to do that now because they're seeing that unless they do that, more of this is to come, and it's not the direction that the bulk of Americans want to go. We're going to take another swift break. We'll be right back with Tim here in just a second. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
You planned a trip to Idaho just to watch potatoes grow. I understand how you must feel. I can't deny they've got a peel. Whoa, you like them whether they're plain or they're stuffed. Oh, yeah. You're addicted to spuds, your greasy
hands. This is like an Irish theme song.
Completing our salute to Idaho.
We love the and salute to Idaho.
This show is dedicated to the Sacketts for fighting a battle for all of us.
Exactly, because I know a lot of people who want to take advantage of that ruling because they are, you know, that old expression, prepare to be impressed. Well, they're preparing to be oppressed. So
yes,
so,
that was Weird Al.
So, Tim, give us your final thoughts in the last 10 minutes, and don't forget to plug your books.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have written two books. One is called Cornerstone of Liberty, Property Rights in 21st Century America, and that came out shortly after the Kelo decision, and it talks primarily about eminent domain, but also about the many other ways that government deprives us of our private property rights, including environmental law like we've been talking about today. And then my new book came out in September of 2010. It's called The Right to Earn a Living, Economic Freedom of the Law, Freedom and the Law. And it's about the many ways that government deprives us of our right to go into business for ourselves and earn a living for ourselves and our families without unreasonable interference by the government. And we were talking at the beginning about history. I try to show how the right to earn a living was protected by courts in England as far back as Shakespeare's day. And our founding fathers learned that when they were studying law, because many of them were lawyers, and when they founded the United States, that was one of the many rights that they intended to protect in our constitutional scheme, what they called the right to pursue happiness. The right to pursue happiness means a lot of things, but one of the things that it means is the right to start a business and run it without unreasonable government interference. I run our Economic Liberty Project at Pacific Legal Foundation, and in fact, just this week, I filed a motion asking the court in Missouri to strike down a law that says that if you want to go into business running a moving company in Missouri, you first have to get permission from all of the existing moving companies. And we say that this is a ridiculous law that violates the Constitution's protections for economic liberty. So that's what that book primarily focuses on, is economic freedom and contracts and our rights to earn a living for ourselves and gain property that we can decide what to do with. That's what freedom means. Mm-hmm. Freedom means autonomy and choice. It means the ability to make decisions without the government coming in and telling me how to live my life. And we often think of that in terms of freedom of speech or freedom of religion, but it's just as important, if not more important, when it comes to my right to run a business or to choose whom to hire or whom to fire, or my right to decide what kind of house to build and where to build it and how to build it. Unfortunately, thanks to laws like the Clean Water Act, that right is often taken away from us.
What about, as you were saying that, it hadn't occurred to me, but what about the smart meters?
What's a smart meter?
Yeah, have you guys been involved at all in the whole smart meter thing with PG&E and well, all the other power companies?
Now, the last I heard about this story, this was where your thermostat would be controlled remotely to tell you how to, that would control the temperature in your house, is that right?
Not yet, but that is how it works in at least one part of Germany.
Yeah. This has the potential to be a great idea. I think I would love to have a remote-controlled thermostat in my house because I would love to be able to turn it on just at the right time that when I get home it's nice and warm, and turn it off when I leave so that it's not that way, and not have to, you know, spend that hour or however long.
But
the problem is that now what they want to do is have the government make that decision for you.
Yes.
They're the one. PG&E would be the one with the remote.
And why not let me have the right to make that decision? That's the problem. And the reason why, if you ask people, why shouldn't I have the right to choose either what to build, what kind of business to run, what to give to charity, or how to heat my house, they'll tell you, well, yes, you should have that right because you're smart and good. But other people, they can make bad decisions, so therefore we should control them. I would make a good decision, but I don't trust other people to make a decision. Well, the problem here is if you don't trust other people to make good decisions in how to run their lives, why should you trust them to make good decisions in how to run other people's lives?
Exactly.
If they're not good enough to make the wise decisions about their own lives, they should not have the power to tell other people how to run their lives.
There's so much that defies logic. So, Tim, when you look at the big picture, and you know, let me throw a little conspiracy theory in there for kicks, especially with the land issues, do you think that the approach that, for instance, the EPA takes is just a matter of so much bureaucracy that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, or is there a bigger power grab behind it all?
Well, I would say partly it's the first thing. Partly it's that the bureaucracy is so inept and so complicated that it often doesn't know what's going on, and it can't, because really bureaucracy just doesn't work that way. It's not possible to be smart enough to run a country from Washington, D.C. You just can't do it. So in large part, it's ineptitude on the part of these agencies. But a large part of it is also the climate of ideas. You know, conspiracy theories, the reason I don't buy into conspiracy theories is because no conspiracy would work until the groundwork has been laid already in terms of ideas. The general public or the bureaucracy has to believe certain ideas. And once they believe those ideas, you don't even need a conspiracy. They're going to do things to take away your freedom because they just don't believe in freedom anymore, right? So the problem here is two things. First, it's generally bureaucratic bungling. But on the other hand, it's because we have a leadership class in this country that no longer believes in the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They believe instead that government exists to tell us how to live our lives the right way, and they're going to do that by writing rules to tell you what kind of plants you can plant on your land, who you can hire and fire, what you can earn at your job, and so forth and so on.
Well, okay, let's talk about, we always try to do a little bit on solutions. Isn't that nice? 2 hours. We're in the last 4 minutes. Let's hurry up and get to the solution.
Save the best for last.
Exactly. So, well, we know the solutions are small, so we save them for the little capsule at the end. So what would you advise people, just kind of in general terms, based on what you're looking at? What do you see coming for them, and how can regular people actually be part of the solution from your vantage point?
It's not just the regular people can be part of the solution. Regular people are the solution. Only regular people can be the solution to these problems. And that's because, as I was saying about ideas, it's ideas that rule the world. We have, you know, the progressive movement took a half century before it took over the minds of the leaders in this country. They started in the 1880s, and it wasn't until the 1930s with the New Deal that progressivism became American law. And the same is true on our side. In fact, we have an even harder thing to overcome because people are already prejudiced against the ideas of freedom and independence. So it's only the average people believing in these ideas and learning about them and learning about the Constitution that can change things going forward. And I'm very optimistic about that. I think there's still, first of all, the Tea Party activism shows that a lot of people care about reclaiming our Constitution from the so-called experts who think they know how to run our lives.
And just for the record, we're not dead.
Of course, no. This is, if anything, the first of the return, not the last. This is the first of the return of people who believe in the Constitution. And they have so many resources at their disposal that are great opportunities to learn more about the Constitution and be active in defending our constitutional values. So my advice to everybody is learn about the ideas of the Constitution, learn about ideas of individual liberty, read the Federalist Papers, read Akil Amar's great book, America's Constitution, a biography, fantastic book. Read about these ideas, watch shows about them, listen to shows about them, and then get out there and tell other people. Teach your children and your neighbor's children and whoever will stand still long enough to listen. And that's the only thing that can change the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, and for all those people who, you know, you hear that something is happening, you know, in your neighborhood, or you hear that something is, what did the Sackett's neighbors do, and people in their town, did they join with them, or was it kind of like, oh, sucks to be you?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that there have been a lot of people who have joined with the Sacketts in fighting for their rights. Lots of friend of the court briefs were filed in their case, almost all of them on their behalf. And there's been a lot of support. As I said, even a lot of environmentalists think that the EPA went too far in this case.
Well, you know, so, it could be them next.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Hey, and I wanted to say thank you for providing us with our next mantra, We the People Radio, talk radio for regular people. I like it.
That's right.
We're all about regular.
As I said, was written for regular people. That this is a nation where regular people run the country, and we have a constitution to run it well. And we can't leave it up to supposed expert bureaucrats in some office in Washington, D.C. to interpret and tell us how to live our lives.
So I really encourage folks, get educated. And again, you know, I throw this out there every once in a while, but regardless of your perceived perception of the Tea Party movement, go to a meeting, because we're all about educating.
And you'll meet people you like. And plug into...
Thank you, Tim.
That was Elizabeth. And plug into Pacific Legal Foundation. They are awesome and worthy of your donations. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks. We'll be back with you next week at We the People Radio.
And we've got another week coming up with lots of public meetings.
Stay tuned for the Don Shulman Show next at KCNR Shasta, Reading.